Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bri or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m. for SN Fresen, where it's all about the food.
Good morning and welcome to the SN Fresen show. I am Adrian Bugatti, your host for today. So it's beginning of December, and December is a time for all of us to sort of like wind down. I don't know about everybody else, but I found that people in the stores in December are more grumpy. Everybody is just in a bad mood, and we are ready for vacation time. And then comes January, and everybody's ready for the kids to go back to school. So for most of us, we're planning our holidays. We've got lots of meals to plan. We've got kids at home, or whether you're going on vacation or having a staycation, December here in South Africa is long. And unless your children are going off to camp, you have a full 6 weeks to feed those hungry kids and teenagers. December is tough on anybody's budget, not just food-wise and meal planning for the hot summer days, where in some cases the entire family is home together and can be an essential step in getting your salary to last the entire month. There's gifts to get, there's food to make, there's parties to attend. It just gets really expensive. And while a summer vacation may be on the cards, whether you're going away or staying at home, this is part of the family, and we have to meal plan, because otherwise your salary is never going to last. And it's one of the most forgotten parts of December vacation. I think most of us we plan where we're going to stay. And if you're self-catering, it's one thing. But if you're going to a hotel, and I don't know about most of you, but I know I would forget to plan for eating out sometimes. I mean, you are on holiday. You want to go out and eat at restaurants. And all of those things are important for you to take into account. Now, you've often also got a family member who, especially in December, they've chosen to have surgeries that they've been putting off for the years so that they can have them while everybody's on vacation and it's not going to interfere with their work. And those are the kind of important things that we need to take into account when planning, especially year-round, but especially now in December, because there are extra people. Both mental and physical illness need to be treated, not only medically, but healing is also aided by nutrition. And that's why this week, the show is mostly about nutrition. Nutritionists and dietitians will tell you that a well-balanced meal is a key to good health, and this applies whether you are dieting, fasting, or ketoing. In the 1980s, as a student nurse, we did nutrition as part of our training because we needed to know what can diabetics eat and what was needed to heal burn wounds, which is very common, unfortunately, around this time of year, but it happens year-round here. This time of the year, it's because people are throwing things like paraffin on the braai to make it burn better and all those, you know, or unstable temporary braais or big barrels for whatever reason. And then there's the heart healthy diets and the kidney diets, and each one needed a very specific meal plan. So this is what we learned, and it was considered, you know, this was your basic standard. And we learned all sorts of things. We learned, like for diabetics, if it was the number three ingredient on your tin or your bottle of tomato sauce or whatever it is, diabetic couldn't have it. That has changed quite a lot. They were never allowed chocolate ever. And then out came Candoral, who made these diabetic chocolates, and the diabetics went mad for all the diabetic sweets and the sugar-free sweets. But what wasn't taken into account was the amount of fat used to make those things taste good. And so we've learned from there over the years how it's changed, and that the diabetic sweets and the diabetic chocolates need to be eaten the same way as any sweet or chocolate, in moderation. They're not that healthy. Then came the heart awareness, and around about 1975, everybody became very aware of heart health, and those diets changed. And all of a sudden, we became aware of cholesterol, and you weren't allowed eggs. You could have eggs maximum of 3 times a week, and then even then, you weren't supposed to have the egg yolk. So all of a sudden, restaurants, not so much here in South Africa, I noticed, but definitely overseas, all of a sudden, you got the egg white omelets, and nobody ate the yolk of the egg. So that was a whole thing. And then we were told that you mustn't have butter, you must use margarine. Then you must not use sugar, you should rather use sweetener. That has changed as well. In fact, they tell you now that depending on the amount of margarine you're using, you're probably better off having the butter, just because of the type. It's not synthesized. Margarine, by the way, for those who don't know, was actually originally a byproduct, and it was fed to animals. It was not meant for human consumption. And then they realized that, well, hang on a second, it would be a good fat substitute for butter in heart healthy because the cholesterol could be monitored and all those kind of things. And it was redesigned for human consumption. But the truth is, it is pure synthetics. And that is why it's important to use, to make your distinction. The vegan butters are a lot better and safer. They are plant-based, which is a healthy alternative, and slightly less chemical and synthesized than the rest. And then with the sugars and the sweeteners, the same thing came. You're better off not having anything. A lot of the sweeteners are actually toxic and over time can cause other issues. So people have moved to natural sweeteners, things like fructose, things like honey, which is a big one. And then in America, they also have some other weird sugar substitutes, palm sugars, things like that, that are more natural, less processed. What I noticed recently is that some of the hospitals don't give you white sugar. If they give you tea or coffee, they give you brown sugar. Now, brown sugar is the only reason it's considered healthier than white sugar is because it goes through less of a process. That is it. There is no specific thing for that. Now, in the 80s, fad diets were huge in the 80s, but it also came round about 75, 80 is when we got like way less and Weight Watchers came in. And one of their big benefits was that, yeah, it was a pain to weigh everything, but the food was portioned off correctly and it was a well-balanced diet. Something I learned from experience is that the people who followed the Weigh Less diet, exactly weighing their food and everything, actually lost weight. People who followed the diet without weighing their portion sizes tended to gain. So that was a big thing. And then there was the liquid protein diet. So that was a low calorie diet where you only drank liquids and protein shakes as meal substitute. It became a big thing. And still today, there are people who substitute one meal in their day with a shake. Then there was even weirder ones, which was the popcorn diet. And it was a diet where you substituted one meal with popcorn. And there were no restrictions on the amount or time that you had to eat that popcorn. You could have it any time of the day. While popcorn is still a really healthy snack, if it isn't done in oil, if it's air popped, it is still a carbohydrate and does need to be taken into account, how much you're eating. Now, like I said, as a student nurse, we learned all about diets, and we will tell you about that in a moment.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
This is Adrian Bugatti, and you're listening to the Essen Fressen Show. The Kollel Bookshop Glen Hazel is going to make this Hanukkah extraordinary. Whatever you need for your Hanukkah observances, all manner of Hanukkiyot, from silver to oil, olive oil, disposable kits, wicks, lighting kits, dreidel, and treats for the kinderlach, come in. The Kollel Bookshop Shop, number 17 Northfield Avenue, Glen Hazel. Right. Very important thing that we learned about balanced diets. And this is a big change from things that, we taught now to what we were taught then, and that is that the food pyramid, which we were all very I don't know how to describe it. We followed it like a religion. Let's put it this way. That was our best thing, was to follow that food pyramid. And the food pyramid is based on, like, what kind of food are you supposed to eat first thing in the morning? And, you know, don't skip breakfast. It's the most important meal of the day. And, you know, there were other things like, you breakfast like a king, you eat lunch like a queen, and you eat dinner like a pauper. And basically that was, you needed breakfast in the morning because that was when you needed your most energy. And lunch was just to keep you going on for the rest of the day. But in the evening, you're going to sleep, you're not really exercising, so you eat a lot less. So your portion sizes were smaller. But here's one of the biggest changes, and this is something we learned. A balanced diet was made up mostly of carbohydrates. Now, that was cereals, grains, breads. Potatoes were included in that time, and rice, and, you know, carbohydrates. Those were the carbohydrates. That's what we were given to eat, and that's what we were told. In fact, I don't think potatoes were actually on. Yeah, potatoes fell under vegetables. They were not under the carbohydrate list. It was bread, cereal, rice, and pasta. That was your carbohydrates, and it was a lot. Your daily portion serving, so spread out over the course of a day, was between 6 and 11 portions per day. Now, that varies whether you're a woman or a man, because men obviously will need more energy than a woman. It also depended on what kind of job you're doing. If you're a sedentary person and you've got an office job, obviously you're going to stick to the lower end of the scale in your portions. But if you were a busy person, say like in construction where you're physical and that, then you need to be on the higher end because you do need that energy. The next thing was fruit. And we were allowed 2 to 4 servings of fruit and 3 to 5 servings of vegetables per day. Very important. So it's still the 5 a day, which a lot of supermarkets and things advertise is your 5 a day. But you've also got to be careful when you're doing your 5 a day. If you're drinking fruit juice, that one glass of fruit juice could be your full 5 fruit for the whole day. And for somebody like me, who doesn't actually like a lot of fruit, it works out well. I can have a half a glass of orange juice and I've done at least half my fruit serving. So it is important. The next thing was the proteins, and that was 2 to 3 servings of each. So meat protein, so meat, fish, chicken, and then the dairy was also 2 to 3 servings of cheese, milk, and eggs. And lastly, at the top of the pyramid was your fats and sugars, and all it said was use sparingly. It doesn't give you portion sizes or anything like that. Over the years, we've done a lot of research. And for those who know, things have moved away from certain carbohydrates. In fact, almost like carbohydrates have been the bad guy, which is not true. You do need carbohydrates to function. Carbohydrates are what give you your energy. It's the type of carbohydrate you are eating. And so a low carb diet doesn't necessarily mean there are no carbs in at all. Even gluten-free people are going to need some type of carbohydrate. We need it. It is what produces the energy that we need on a daily basis. Now, the current food pyramid is totally different. And you'll see from this portion sizes, there are a lot less. And one of those is because of the advent of computers and things like that. Even in the past, when you had an office job, if you were sitting at your computer and you needed to tell somebody something, you had to walk over to their desk to tell them, or you needed to go to the printer to fetch, because the printers are huge, bulky things. if you needed to give your boss a copy of whatever you were working on, you'd have to get up, you'd have to print it out, take it to them, things like that. Even meetings, you would have to get up and go to the meeting. Nowadays, we're stuck at our computers. We can just send an email or even a WhatsApp, and we don't have to leave our desk. We can have Zoom meetings, not a problem. There is no issues with any of those things, but it does mean that we're not getting exercise. In fact, sad to say, pretty much the only people getting any exercise and fresh air are the guys who are vaping and smoking because they've got to go out the building. So they've got to get up from their desk, they've got to take a walk outside, and while they vape and smoke, and it does give them a bit of downtime. So not a great idea, but I think companies should look into giving the non-smokers and the non-vapers their 5 minutes as well. I think that's part of it. So the current balanced diet, as I was saying, is made up of only 5 to 7 portions, and the base of the pyramid is no longer carbohydrates. It's fruit and vegetables. So things have changed. Now the majority of your meals need to be made up of your fruit and vegetables, and that's 5 to 7 servings per day. Only then come the carbohydrates as secondary on your food list, and that is down from the previous 20 years, 30 years of 6 to 11 serving, down to 3 to 5 servings of carbohydrates. And these have changed as well. Whereas previously they didn't tell you what kind of carbohydrate, like you could have any bread, it is now more specific. They are suggesting whole meal and whole grains as opposed to just anything you want. Rice obviously is still on the list. Cereals, they're also looking at certain cereals. Just be careful when you're looking at cereals. There are certain cereals that are supposed to be really great for you and healthy and all of those kind of things, but they contain what's called high GI. And that means they give you this huge boost of energy, and then your sugar drops during the day, and you'll find you're more hungry, you're tired, those kind of things. So my favorite cereal in the morning is Pro Nutro. But I do know that when I eat my Pro Nutro, even the whole wheat one, I am hungry literally 2 hours later. And that is one of the things, is this gives you a very short burst of energy, which means it shoots your sugar in your body up, whether you're diabetic or not, and then drops it back down again, and you're therefore hungry. And that's what carbohydrates do. And this is why the new diets or new healthy eating says that the majority of your food should be fruit and vegetables, because that gives you energy as well. A lot of fruit is a natural carbohydrate. It is easy for your body to use. It doesn't give you sugar spikes. It just keeps you nice and, calm throughout the day. Your sugar stays level. There are obviously carbohydrates that are going to make your sugar rise up naturally, things like potatoes. So if you still like your potato, they have discovered that baby potatoes have less of an effect on your body sugar than a full potato. The same with sweet potatoes. They are better for you than normal potatoes, but they are high in carbohydrates. And that's why, like keto and banting do not allow potato for that specific reason. Now, men and teenagers can have up to 7 servings of carbohydrates in the day. That is because teenagers are growing and they are often physical at school, and men just in general need more carbohydrates, especially if they go to gym. Then it is recommended that there are 3 to 4 servings of low-fat dairy protein eaten per day. Children and teens can have more, and so can pregnant women. Meat, fish, chicken, and vegan proteins are limited to 2 servings a day. So all of a sudden, we've changed where the original protein was this huge amount of protein, where your 2 to 3 servings for meat and dairy and everything together, it's been limited just to 2. Fats and oils are now used in their own tier, and can be used sparingly, and they consider spreads as well, so margarines. Sugars and sweets are to be given rarely as they are a special treat. Now, while I was doing the research for this, I did find an interesting little excerpt of an article, and that was from the National Library of Medicine. So, decades ago, the discussion of an impending global pandemic of obesity was thought of as heresy. Diets in the 1970s began to shift towards increased reliance upon processed foods, increased away from home intake, and greater use of edible oils and sugar sweetened vegetables. I mean, beverages, sorry. Reduced physical activity and increased sedentary time was also seen. This is more or less, well, especially in South Africa, where we got TVs as well. So people were sitting in front of the TVs at night instead of the kids running around outside playing games. These changes began in the early 90s in the low and middle income world, but did not become clearly recognized until sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia's poorest countries to higher income ones are shown to have experienced a rapid increase in overweight and obesity status. Concurrent rapid shifts in diet and activity are documented. An array of large-scale programmatic and policy shifts are being explored in a few countries. However, despite the major health challenges faced, few countries are serious in addressing prevention of dietary challenges faced. Now, whatever we think about the government, one of the things that Dr. Motsoaledi, our Minister of Health, implemented was our sugar taxes. And that is why we suddenly landed up with all our sodas, our cold drinks, saying reduced kilojoules or low calorie, that kind of thing. So all the sweet drinks suddenly got these substitutes, these sugar substitutes, in trying the synthetic stuff, in trying to keep them still sweet and palatable for people. I have to admit that for me, anything with sweetener in has a terrible aftertaste. And honestly, for Shabbos, I'm prepared to pay that little extra to have something with real sugar in it. But it does, what it has done as well is introduced a lot of us to things like iced teas made at home. So if you're looking for a really better for you substitute for your cold drinks and your cordials, and I mean, even the sweet, well, the cordials that we make, I mean, I grew up on Oros, I don't know about the rest of you. Even that is now got saccharine in it or sucrazine or something like that, just to sweeten it. It has less sugar. I discovered making iced tea. I got soda water or sparkling water. You make up some herbal tea, whichever one you want, whether it's caffeine free or not. A nice berry flavor always works well. Boil it up. You make it extra strong. And then what I did was I added honey for the sweetness and the soda water to give it the sparkle, which is a healthy option for the carbonated drink. And everybody loves it. Serve it ice cold, and it is a really good substitute and a lot healthier than what we're having. Another thing that has changed is the eggs. Like, as I said, everybody said cholesterol, the egg yolks, can't have those, can't have those. Well, that changed as well. They're now saying that eggs are fine because otherwise, what are you going to do? When we were eating three eggs a day, you couldn't have a piece of cake because most cakes use like six eggs. So they have discovered that cholesterol is not actually totally coming from the eggs. Yes, diet does help. It's the reduced fat and oils that will help more, but it is often just hereditary and medication is there now. Fad diets, big thing, they arrived. And we were stuck with that. They're here to stay, not going away. The most successful one is the Mediterranean diet, and that is an intermittent, and then there's an intermittent fasting, and then there is the keto or Banting way of life. Now, this is not a diet, it is a way of life, and you do need to follow it. And now people are following the vegetarian more option. Not only is it more cost effective on your budget, but for a lot of people, they are finding that the plant-based proteins are healthier for them. Just be careful and just remember that a lot of the soy substitute or soy burger patties and soy sausages and soy, I don't know what else there is, are quite heavily processed and can be just as unhealthy to your body as any other processed product. They are a healthy option, I'm going to say that. Rather buy the processed soy poloni than ordinary polonies, because polonies are, you know, sandwich meats are highly, highly processed. So it's an important thing to think of. Talking about health, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you have your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here. So important to know, once again, whatever diet you're going on, whatever health plan or eating plan you want to follow, you do need to be healthy before you start it. We're not talking about having a heart condition or that kind of thing. Your body needs to be able to tolerate the change in lifestyle that you're going to need to make to become a healthier person. You're listening to Adrian Bugatti. This is the Essence Freshen Show.
Khalashing for khalas? Want to bry or fine dine? This is Essence Freshen. It's all about the food.
I'm Adrian Bugatti, and this is the Essence Freshen Show. Now, as I said, fad diets are here to stay, not going anywhere. We are going to be following them for years to come. But one of the things that I've noticed is with the most successful eating or diets or whatever they are, they all come with a meal plan, a way for you to keep better control of how are you eating. Whether you're doing the intermittent fasting, you do still need guidelines. The Mediterranean diet gives you a proper eating plan, and your keto or Banting coach is going to do the same thing for you. Your dietitian, when you go and you just want a straightforward weight loss diet or a heart healthy diet, whether you have diabetes, whether you have kidney problems, all of those diets do require an eating plan to help guide you through the process. And that is an important thing. But the truth is that any eating plan that you go, whether they give you a meal plan or they don't, whether you download it off the internet or not, you do need to know that you are going to be changing your way of life. Fad diets are great. Everybody loves them because you lose weight very quickly. But one of the hardest things on doing a proper eating plan to get healthy, to lose weight, to improve whatever it is you want to improve, is the fact that you will hit plateaus where you've lost weight and then all of a sudden you've just stuck and nothing helps. And one of the things that I've noticed that a lot of the dietitians are doing today is they're not weighing as often as we used to. We were told you've got to get on a scale first things, do it on a Monday morning. Now people are going, no, that's not really working. And then they were doing body mass index, you know, looking at your height versus your weight and that kind of thing. That also doesn't work because it doesn't take into account an extremely fit person who has more muscle than fat, as opposed to a person who's got more fat than muscle. And let me tell you about that. And that's why getting health assessments are so important before you start any new eating program, is you can have the skinniest person, okay? So everybody looks at them and goes, wow, look how healthy, they're nice and thin. But chances are they may not have enough muscle to help their body move and keep strong and healthy. They may be more fat than muscle. And then I've had it once, which was quite a strange thing for me. I was teaching CPR, and I used to try and choose the largest person in the class to turn them over into recovery position just to prove that you don't need to be big to do this. And we were doing pulse checks because it was a level 3 first aid class. And this ginormous man, literally, I mean, when I wanted to do recovery position, now you've got to get the arm opposite you across the chest. I actually had to walk around him to get to his arm because I couldn't reach over him. He was that big. We're all doing pulses, and he tells me his pulse is only 54. And I'm looking at this man going, not happening. He was, if you do body mass index, he was in the morbidly obese category. Doctors looking at him would also say it. Asking him, do you have a heart condition? I was like really worried. And he goes, no. I said, do you exercise? He goes, yeah, I swim every single day. This man's heart was strong. He had good muscle tone, despite the fat that was there. So yes, he could have lost weight. He would have been even healthier. But looking at somebody and just doing their body mass index doesn't tell you whether they are healthy or not. And that is why it is important to get a health checkup before you start any kind of meal plan or eating plan and everything. Now, we're in December. As I said in the beginning, it's holiday season. Everybody's home. Everybody wants to enjoy it. It's the year-end functions. Everybody's going out. If you're on holiday, you're definitely eating out. So what do you do? How do you stick to these diets that you've chosen, these lifestyles that you've chosen to help you keep fit and healthy without ruining your own holiday and possibly your family's by going, oh, well, we can't have that and I can't eat this. I can only eat this. How do you do that? And my best advice for you is to consult with your dietitian or coach on how best to enjoy your summer holidays without losing any momentum that you've gained towards your health goal. Now, one of the things that I have discovered in the last few weeks is for those who are looking after people recovering from illnesses or recovering from surgeries, is the food. Food is, you're in bed, your food for some people has no taste. Your food, just, you know, the way I serve it at home is that's going on the plate, you're eating it, done. It doesn't work when you're not feeling well. So most people will tell you that we eat with our eyes. When the food looks good, you're going to want to eat it. And it is definitely true. But the smell also can play a huge part in your appetite. Something that smells inviting is going to make you want to be hungry. Now, for me, nothing better than frying up some garlic. Whereas one of my children goes, eh, garlic. They don't mind it in the food, but one of the things that they do struggle with is the smell of frying garlic, which I can't understand at all. I think it's amazing. And the truth is, I use garlic in pretty much everything because it is a natural antibacterial antibiotic. Now, for those who are not well and find eating a challenge, whether it's because the food has no flavor or your taste buds are undergoing a challenge, food that looks and smells good is the only thing that's going to get you to eat even a little bit. And with that in mind, I'm using December as a time to learn not only new flavors, which is actually for me a year-round thing, but also how to plate the food up so that it looks good. The reason I've chosen December is because I will have most of my family away. So it's nice, it's quiet time. I have time to make food that I really like and then plate it the way I want it. And everyone else, you know, if you're visiting me, and that means my children, if they're visiting, they get to taste these new flavors. But December, everybody's busy and away and traveling and working and what have you. So I've been recently starting watching these plating tutorials and stuff. And one of the tips in a plating tutorial is to use plates that complement or contrast the color of the food. Now, in a home setting, that's a little unrealistic, truthfully, unless you've got extra money or lots of plates. So for me, wanting to post on Instagram and encourage people and to showcase kosher food, I'm going to have to buy like one plate of every color kind of thing, just to have different options. But they don't only mean the color of the plate. So I'm stuck at home. My color is I've got white and navy blue. I've got gray and then the old Archrock see-through brown plates. And I can't plate anything on that. They look terrible. But brown is not a bad color. One of the things that the chef that was doing the plating was saying that you need to decide, is the plate going to complement the colors or is it going to contrast the colors? So he was saying, like, plating rice and fish in a cheese sauce or a white sauce on a white plate is not going to look appetizing. And that's where the herbs and spices and colors come in to make it look better. Little bit of sauces in a different color, things that are going to sort of highlight that white on white. He also suggested plates of different shapes. The one thing he did suggest avoiding is brightly colored plates with patterns. So plates that have got sort of a, I've been seeing them around a lot lately. They're sort of look, they're glossy. I think the one I saw the other day was a beautiful orange, like a burnt orange with a brown trim around, but it wasn't a flat plate. It had a slight edge to it. And all that also kind of plays a part on what kind of food are you serving. So if you're serving a, say, stew that's got the gravy, you want a plate with a bit of an edge. Otherwise, the gravy just looks sloppy. So those are the things I'm going to look at. And the other place to find inspiration, obviously, is cookbooks. Beautiful cookbooks with beautiful pictures of how the food is presented and what it looks like. Sharon Lurie's cookbooks have got gorgeous photos in. You can get inspiration from that, especially when dealing with meat meals. But there are others that do look amazing. A lot of my vegan inspiration has come from a couple of websites. So go onto Google and have a look and see what there is. If you are working in December, please enjoy and take the time to actually maybe even start teaching children. Now, if anybody's ever watched the Children's MasterChef, you'll see these kids are very young. So you can start teaching your kids at like 6 years old. Teaching them gives you a much better, clearer way of what they eat. And it also teaches them what do foods look like in their unprocessed, sort of natural looking thing, like a whole potato turned into chips or into fries. What does an eggplant look like? What does a tomato look like that's not on their burger? Those are important things for kids to learn. Kids can learn little simple things, and there are so many kids' cookbooks out there with beautiful techniques. You will need to, obviously, when it comes to things like cutting, have to help them. Watch them while they're grating, watch them while they're peeling so that they don't injure themselves. But I've noticed that kids who learn to cook learn to eat more varieties of foods, even the fussy ones. And one of the things about the fussy ones is that little fussy eaters are likely to eat, more likely to eat what they have made. And the big fussy ones are likely to eat what their children have made, just out of pride, whether they like it or not.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
I'm Adrian Bugatti, your host. And I just want to say to everybody that, I mean, please stay safe, stay healthy, and eat well over this December holiday. Enjoy the break, rejuvenate, recalibrate, go back into the new year. And for those of us who are staying home, or for those that are working, enjoy the exodus from the city to the coast and have your quiet office time. It is a lot quieter. And I find, I don't know, in offices, people tend to be more relaxed when the holiday season is there even if they are working. So you are listening to Adrian McGarty. This is the Essen Fresen Show. Have a good December holiday.